The plan was for me to meet Freeman on Olympus Cree. I went to my billet, packed a small knife and a flechette firing pistol, and left for the landing bay. I met Sergeant Nobles in the landing bay.
A shuttle? Where the hell did you find a specking shuttle?
All the admirals have them. I put in a requisition while you were at the summit.
We entered the shuttle. It had a living room-like main cabin, which included couches, chairs, and a wet bar. Aft, there would be a small office complete with sleeping accommodations.
You bucking for a promotion, Sergeant?
No, sir.
Well, that's too bad. Anyone who can pull off a coup like this belongs in the officers' corps. I'll put in your paperwork when this business is over, Lieutenant.
Are you serious about that, sir?
Just don't start angling for captain or we're going to have a problem. I hate wasting a perfectly good enlisted man by giving him bars.
I did not even notice when we took off. We moved so smoothly. Our entry into the atmosphere went the same way. I pivoted my armchair so that I could look out a window. It was nighttime on this side of Olympus Cree. The clouds below us were so thick that they blocked out the city lights below as we flew through.
We're coming in for a landing, sir.
Looking out of the rain-coated window, I saw the sprawling lights of the spaceport. Runways stretched more than a mile in five different directions, their blue lights forming a pentagonal constellation. We touched down smoothly, then taxied toward the multifaceted glass castle that served as Odessa's air terminal. Once we stopped taxiing, the shuttle's pneumatic struts compacted until the fuselage was only a few inches from the ground. A car waited for me on the runway. I trotted the few feet to the car and was surprised to see who waited inside.
Admiral Cabot, aren't you supposed to be on St. Augustine?
Not much left for me to do over there.
How did you know where to find me?
Colonel Hollingsworth sent me your itinerary, sir.
General Hollingsworth.
Warshaw made him a general?
That's right. I'm here looking for a civilian named Ray Freeman. Heard of him?
He's waiting for you at Camp Marshall.
Camp Marshall was the largest military base in Odessa.
Are you sure he's there?
Oh, he's a hard man to miss.
Evacuate the planet? I have 500,000 men here.
I'm not just talking about your men. I mean the civilian population.
Well, that isn't going to happen. The Unifieds aren't going after civilians.
We sat alone in the camp commander's office.
You're talking about millions of people. I couldn't evacuate them if I wanted to. I don't have enough ships.
You're gonna need more.
You wouldn't happen to have a few lying around that you could loan me?
I have 25 of them. They carry a quarter of a million passengers apiece.
Bullshit. Nothing but a planet can carry a quarter of a million people.
They're barges.
Where the spec did you find something like that?
As soon as I asked, I realized the only possible answer. I shelved that information away. Freeman was on the verge of showing me his hidden cards.
Ray, why do we need to evacuate?
Freeman studied me for a moment, his expression impassive. Then he reached into his pocket and pulled out a small device that looked like a notepad with a screen. Whatever it was, it looked tiny in Freeman's gigantic right hand. He placed it flat on the table. The two-way communicator was 6 inches long, less than 3 inches wide, and flat as a shingle. The screen that filled the frame was already lit. A face I recognized stared up from it.
Good morning, Harris.
Good morning.
We hear you've been promoted to general. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I stared at the screen, trying to figure out its magic. Few people had earned my respect as thoroughly as Dr. William Sweetwater. He died more bravely than any man I knew. William Sweetwater died on New Copenhagen. He led the team of scientists that unraveled the aliens' technology. He was a brilliant, fearless dwarf who always referred to himself in the royal plural.
We hear you've been busy resurrecting planets, Harris.
I almost spoke up when I heard his use of the word resurrected. He looked real enough, but any school kid could scan a photograph into a computer and convert it into a three-dimensional animation. Making the animation interactive, though, giving it the exact right voice and mannerisms, that would require familiarity with Sweetwater and extensive audio files. The character on the screen not only looked and sounded like Sweetwater, it acted like him.
You mean the revolution?
Doctor, give me a moment to speak with General Harris.
Certainly, Raymond.
Freeman switched the two-way off.
He doesn't know you are at war with the Unified Authority.
Of course he doesn't. He's been dead for 3 years. The only thing going through his mind is worms.
He thinks he's alive, and that he's been assigned to the Clark Space Station.
The Arthur C. Clark Space Station, or the Wheel, as most people called it, was a scientific observation post on the extreme outer edge of the Orion Arm.
He doesn't think anything. He's dead. He's more than dead. He's incinerated. We left him lying next to a 50-megaton bomb.
He may only be a V-job of Sweetwater, but he thinks he's real. And we need to keep it that way. They replicated Sweetwater's brain.
What about Breeze?
Breeze is in there, too. No point having one without the other.
In there? On the wheel?
They believe they are alive and that they are on the wheel for their own protection.
For their own protection? Protection from what? They're dead.
From the Avatari.
Hearing Freeman mention the Avatari, I felt a moment of elation. I'd been expecting Freeman to play whatever ace card he'd been hiding, but he didn't have a card at all. Instead, he had the missing piece of a very frightening puzzle. The double Y clones, the rush to get as many ships to Olympus Cree as possible, the way the Unified Authority never pressed the attack, they all fit together in a flash of clarity. The double Y clones were never meant to destroy our Navy. They were meant to behead its leadership, to kill the officers, and leave the ships and crews operational. Once our Navy fell apart, the Unifieds hoped to assimilate the ships and the crews. Clones were designed to follow orders, not to give them. Kill all the leaders, and the followers might well give up without a fight when ordered to surrender. Then what? Then send the ships here? Send the entire Navy to Olympus Cree to... If the Unifieds weren't planning to attack, why did Freeman want me here, I asked myself. And I knew the answer. The Unified Authority wasn't going to invade Olympus Cree, but somebody else might. Somebody the Unifieds feared. The Avatari.
The barges you were talking about, they're UA ships, right?
Yes.
It's New Copenhagen all over again.
This isn't New Copenhagen. This is Armageddon. Sweetwater doesn't know that he's dead, and neither does Breeze. It's gotta stay that way. There is no way of knowing how they will react if they find out they are dead.
What about the mine on New Copenhagen?
He doesn't know about it.
And Breeze doesn't know he was torn apart by a giant spider?
They think we evacuated them from New Copenhagen. They know you liberated some planets, but they think you did it for the Unified Authority.
And I'm supposed to lie to them?
Lives are depending on it.
Lives are depending on my lying to a computer?
If you can't be trusted to do what you're...
What do you care about saving lives? You've never cared about anybody. He did not answer. You haven't become some kind of homicidal humanitarian, have you?
Are you ready to talk to Sweetwater?
Not even remotely. When did they boot up the ghost?
When we lost New Copenhagen.
Lost New Copenhagen? I bet that was right about the same time you showed up on Terrano.
Freeman said nothing.
They sent two clones to kill me.
Five clones. I had three of them before you came back from St. Augustine.
They sent the clones, then they lost New Copenhagen, so they sent you to keep me alive.
Freeman sat silent and impassive.
Why attack Olympus Cree?
New Copenhagen was the first planet we liberated from the aliens. We liberated Olympus Cree next.
No, we didn't. The first planet we liberated was Terrano.
The Inner Orion fleet landed here while you were still in Bliss.
Freeman meant Fort Bliss, the concentration camp the Unified Authority built as a home away from home for the clones who fought in the Battle of New Copenhagen.
Oh. That's not good. Not good at all.
If the Avatari were taking planets by the order of their liberation, Terrano was next in line. And here I learned something about myself. I thought I had washed my hands of Ava Gardner and Ellery Doctorow and the stupid people who lived on Terrano. But now, knowing that they might all be killed, I had a change of heart. Fantasizing about them getting what I felt they deserved was one thing. Knowing that they all might die was entirely different.
You ready to talk to Sweetwater?
I nodded. He was a ghost. Just one more ghost with which I would have to reckon. One more occupant in a life already overpopulated by the dead. Peace does not always come with a signed treaty. Sometimes it is foisted upon sworn enemies when they realize they must either work together or perish.
Do you trust them?
I reported to Warshaw about my meeting with Freeman. He was still on the Kamehameha, still orbiting Gobi.
Who? Freeman? The dead scientist? Or the Unified Authority? I think Freeman is telling the truth. Sweetwater is...
I don't care about Sweetwater. He's just a cartoon.
I believe Freeman.
Yeah? You believed him when he said the UA was going to invade us. That turned out to be a lie.
He never said it was the Unified Authority. I misread him.
Sounds like he was counting on you to misread him.
Probably.
I don't see any reason why I should trust Freeman. He's your pal, not mine.
What if he can prove what he's saying?
How's he gonna do that?
I'm flying out to New Copenhagen in an hour.
New Copenhagen? That's off our broadcast grid. How are you going to get there?
As a guest of the Unified Authority. They're sending out an explorer. Explorers were unarmed research vessels. The first self-broadcasting ships were explorers.
Sounds like a cozy arrangement. They're just going to send a ship and you're just going to speck and climb aboard. Sounds like you're getting into bed with them.
We're running out of time.
Yeah, I did some checking, Harris. There are 17 million people living on Olympus Cree. Evacuating the planet is not going to be easy. Did your friend happen to mention where the aliens are going after Olympus Cree?
Terrano.
Terrano? Oh, that's rich. Serves those assholes right for kicking us off their speckin' planet.
We need to clear them out.
We can't evacuate every speckin' planet.
We have to try. We're talking about millions of people.
Not our people. Remember, Harris, they didn't want anything to do with us.
We can't just sit back and watch it happen.
Where would we put the refugees? We can't keep moving them from planet to planet. We can't even speck and fit that many passengers in our ships. Even if the Unifieds come out with a fleet of million-man barges, we can't fit them all. And that's assuming that Freeman and the Unifieds are telling the truth. I'm not convinced.
They sent me a video file taken by a satellite over New Copenhagen. Want to have a look? I'd had the file queued and ready before I called Warshaw. Now I simply touched a corner of the screen to upload the file. I studied Warshaw's reaction as he reviewed the devastation. For the first 20 seconds, he scrutinized the images with the air of detachment one would expect from a high-ranking officer. After that, wrinkles appeared across his broad face, and his scowl went slack. Did you get to Valhalla?
Valhalla?
The city.
I'm there now. Doesn't look as bad as Norristown did after the aliens attacked.
Look at the buildings. Look at the windows. Everything is burned.
Did they set off a nuke?
The Avatari don't use bombs.
Maybe they did it to themselves.
What are you saying? You think this was some sort of accident? You can't possibly think they did this on purpose. You don't believe that any more than I do. Sweetwater says the destruction was global. Not an inch of the planet was spared. The Unifieds couldn't do that even if they wanted to. They don't have anything powerful enough to do that. If they did, they would have used it on us instead of themselves.
I don't trust them.
Yeah, me either.
Are you sure you want to go alone?
Hollingsworth and I stood in the landing bay of the Ad-Din. A team of MPs dressed in ground crew uniforms crowded around the Explorer with pistols in their pockets and tools in their hands, while a genuine traffic ace guided the Explorer into its parking slot. The hatch opened, and our armed MPs, ground crew, boarded the ship to service it. A few moments later, a second crew entered the Explorer and checked the engines and batteries. Three men met me as I stepped into the cabin. I recognized all of them. Tobias Andropov, the newest member of the Unified Authority Linear Committee. General George Nickel Hill, now the highest-ranking officer in the UA military. And Gordon Hughes, a native of Olympus Cree who had risen to the highest seats of power in the Unified Authority before defecting to the Confederate Arms Treaty during the Mogad War. I had never met Andropov before.
General Harris, I have heard so much about you. It's good of you to meet with us.
Sounds like we have a lot to talk about. Next came Hughes. It's been a while, Congressman.
How is my planet?
We will do everything we can to protect it. General Hill and I traded salutes grudgingly. We were members of antagonistic forces. He did not recognize my authority, and I despised his.
So, back to New Copenhagen.
Back to New Copenhagen. The ground crew turned the Explorer around, and we launched. We flew out into space for several minutes.
I was always very interested to meet you, General.
Tobias Andropov was the youngest man in the cabin. Well, he was the youngest natural-born among us. Younger than Hill and a great deal younger than Hughes. He was 44, making him 15 years older than me. His black hair had the flat look of hair that is dyed, but his skin was smooth, and his blue eyes were clear of veins and bags.
I read a lot of military history as a boy. I don't know if you knew this, but my father was a general in the Marines.
I didn't know that.
I've read a lot about liberators, and I found something interesting. They never lost a battle, not even so much as a skirmish.
There was little man. We had four liberators in that battle.
We won that battle.
Historians would see it as a great victory, but the survivors didn't. What about New Prague and Albatross Island?
Those weren't battles, General. They were police actions, and the liberators came out on top.
They went berserk and killed civilians.
You're not looking at it with a clinical eye. They accomplished their objectives in both cases, then lost control of themselves afterward. It wasn't the battles that they lost. They destroyed the enemy.
That's one way of looking at it.
And you are the last of the liberators. I find it interesting that even after you defected to the Enlisted Man's Empire, you're still winning every battle.
But we're not here to discuss military history. We're here to plan an evacuation.
Right. That is why we've come.
Mr. Andropov is of the opinion that we might be able to fight our way out of this situation.
I suggested the possibility. I simply meant that there are other avenues to explore besides evacuation. We could make the entire Navy available for the fight, thanks to your Empire's new broadcast network. Should the aliens try to capture Olympus Cree? Well, we know how to blast through their ion curtain defense.
General Hill listened to the intercommunications system, then leaned into our conversation.
Mr. Andropov, our pilot informs me that we are about to enter the atmosphere.
Before you experiment with military options, you'd better evacuate the planet. We all agreed that the first thing we need to do is to evacuate Olympus Cree.
Where do you suggest we take them, Gordon?
Take them to Earth. God knows there's enough room for them there.
What are we going to do with the population of Terrano?
As I understand it, there are only 5 million people left on Terrano. There's plenty of room for them on Earth.
And Providence Cree? What about the people on Providence Cree?
Take them all to Earth.
The lower we descended, the more grim the atmosphere became. I could see the planet below through a hazy sky that was black, but not pitch black. It was a dirty, rusty black. The thing that surprised me most was the snow. A fresh layer of fluffy gray snow covered the burned-out countryside, blanketing forests in which the burned-out hulls of pine trees pointed into the sky, as straight and naked as sewing needles. There could be no question that this was New Copenhagen. I'd fought in these woods under very different conditions. I recognized the terrain. I recognized the role of the forest floor, even spotted clearings in which our Marines and soldiers had ambushed the enemy. Clearings? The entire specking forest was a goddamn clearing. I could not see so much as a hint of a leaf or a pine needle.
What kind of weapon does something like this?
Sweetwater thinks the Avatari ignited the atmosphere.
Ignited the atmosphere? What the hell does that mean?
No one responded. They didn't know.
Have you debriefed the survivors?
That is the point, General. There are no survivors.
When I looked back out the window, we were flying above Valhalla, the capital city of New Copenhagen. I had seen this city destroyed, but in the 3 years since I left, the residents had undoubtedly rebuilt it.
It looks a lot better now than it did when the Avatari left the first time.
Igniting the atmosphere had toppled some buildings and left others standing. I saw no logic in the buildings that remained and the ones that fell. We flew over tall buildings that stood and piles of rubble that might once have been great skyscrapers. On one side of the street, a three-story building might stand untouched, while across the street, a building of seemingly similar size lay in ruins. We flew over an intersection in which cars had sunk axle deep into the road below them. The cars were all the same color now, the dull nickel gray of burned metal.
We landed drones down there to gather data. The radiation levels are normal. The carbon monoxide is off the charts, but that's predictable. Whatever did this, it killed off the plant life. It burned everything. We haven't found a patch of ground that has not been burned. I can tell you what Sweetwater says happened here if you're interested. Sweetwater doesn't think we fought the Avatari army that first time out. He thinks they sent their exterminators, maybe only their janitorial squad. He says they sent their C-team to sweep us cockroaches out of the way. That's what we fought. He thinks they're sending their army this time. Last time they wanted us to leave. That was before we took our planets back. Now they're sending their army.
We left the city, flying no more than 50 feet above a residential suburb. Some of the homes below us had exploded. For the most part, the neighborhood looked like it could be washed clean with a hose. Just spray the soot away and move right in.
I don't want to fight them again. I think we got lucky last time. I think we got lucky, and they didn't take us seriously, and they were fighting with one arm tied behind their backs, and they still almost won.
We don't have any other options. Even if we move everyone to Earth, how long do you think it will be before they come kill us there?
The pilot banked and turned so that he could take us back for another pass across Valhalla.
Did you ever hear the story of the Gossamer Moth?
Hughes stared out the window, his eyes drinking in the devastation. Did he see New Copenhagen or Olympus Cree below?
I used to tell my children a bedtime story about a moth that lived near an Air Force base. It watched the fighters as they flew in and out of the base. It watched them dogfight and studied their maneuvers. One night, a lizard crawled up into its tree, and the moth attacked the lizard, using the tactics it had learned by watching the fighters. But it forgot that it was just a moth, and the lizard ate it. I don't know what the Avatari are like, but I think to them, we're just another moth. Just a million moths.
Apparently, Freeman wasn't the only person with a direct line to important ghosts. He did not attend the negotiation with the Unified Authority, but a member of the UA Academy of Science with a direct link to Sweetwater and Breeze did. We sat in the conference room on the Kamehameha. Andropov, Hughes, Hill, and the scientist sat on one side of the table. I sat across from them. I was alone. Warshaw sat at the head of the table, running the meeting.
You give the orders in your corner of the galaxy, and I give the orders around here. Harris, are you sure that was New Copenhagen they showed you?
Yes.
How do you know?
I recognized it.
Thought it's all burned up. How did you recognize it?
Admiral, we have to get moving. We need to begin the evacuation immediately. There may not be enough time as it is. Look, we'll fly you to New Copenhagen. We'll fly a team of clone scientists to take soil samples. We'll do whatever it takes to make you believe us. But we need to start the evacuation. Every second could mean lives lost.
I'm not convinced.
Accustomed to working with self-important officers and politicians, the Academy scientists tried to get the meeting back on track.
Admiral, we can provide scientific findings. We've sent drones to run tests on several of your planets.
My planets? What planets are my planets?
The planets you stole from the Unified Authority.
Oh, stole them? So you were trespassing on some of the planets we stole. Which ones?
Olympus Cree, St. Augustine, Terrano.
Yeah? And how did you run tests on those planets?
They sent in double Ys.
What's that?
Those were the clone assassins Andropov and his pal sent to kill me and my officers.
Andropov flushed with anger. Hill looked nervous as well.
Well, I didn't know about that.
You didn't know about the clone assassins. Don't worry about it. We've got the situation under control.
We found traces of a particle we're calling Tachyon D on New Copenhagen. There are large concentrations of that same particle on a few of your planets.
Oh, we're back to them being my planets.
The highest concentration is on Olympus Cree. We also found it on Terrano.
So you think we should abandon our planets because you found this particle?
There's no point staying. Whatever hit New Copenhagen, it didn't leave much behind.
How many people died on New Copenhagen?
All of them.
7 million.
What's the population of Olympus Cree?
17 million. We have 25 barges capable of transporting 250,000 people at a time.
Are they self-broadcasting?
No, sir, they are not.
So how are you going to get them here?
We need you to link the Mars broadcast station into your network.
Mars station? I thought the MOGATs busted it.
We've constructed a temporary station. It's primitive, but it will do the job for now.
So we open the gates and let you roll your horse in. I'm not biting. And you, Harris, I never figured you for a collaborator.
Admiral!
Get this through your head, you overinflated son of a bitch. We have a new enemy, someone too big and mean to beat. There's no question who is going to win this one. The only question is how many people we are going to lose.
If they're telling the truth.
Oh, right. We can't trust the Unifieds. Tell you what, let's run a test on Olympus Cree. We'll just wait and watch. And after 17 million people burn, then we'll know it's time to evacuate Terrano. Is that what you want?
An angry silence filled the room. We all sat staring into the table.
Okay. So let's say you're right. Even if we get everybody off Olympus Cree, where do you plan on putting them?
We have to save them.
If you're routing them through Mars and taking them to Earth, your barges better have broadcast engines.
I told you, we've got a temporary station by Mars.
Check the orbits. The jump from Earth to Mars is over 100 million miles at the moment. That's a 3-hour trip, even for your ships.
Warshaw held up a little handheld computer he must have been hiding under the table.
There's a way around that. We can store the evacuees in the Mars spaceport.
The spaceport is closed. We haven't used it since the MOGAT war.
The military used it as a processing station before the battle on New Copenhagen.
All of the equipment was operational when we shut it down. We should be able to get the power and oxygen running.
But that still leaves us with your Trojan horse. I don't trust you. And I don't want your specking ships in my broadcast network.
Admiral, what if you took Olympus Kree off your broadcast grid?
Are you saying I should give the planet away?
He's saying we should amputate it. The planet is as good as gone. Once we remove it from our network...
I won't know if the aliens came or the whole thing was a fraud.
I'll stay and oversee the evacuation. I was speaking of Olympus Kree and thinking of Terrano. Not even Terrano, really. Just one of its residents. Earth date, November 16, AD 2517. Location, Olympus Kree. Galactic position, Orion Arm. The rescue had been going on for 3 days now, and I still had not gotten used to the look of the Unified Authority's new barges. They were little more than biospheres. They looked like floating warehouses as they grew out of their anomalies. They had a nub in the front for a cockpit and enormous rocket engines in the back, but they lacked even the semblance of wings or aerodynamics. They did not have landing bays or atmospheric locks. Transports would land along the hulls of the barges on special pads with automatic clamps that would fasten onto the transport's skids. Passengers would enter the barges through umbilical walkways.
Those barges have got to be the ugliest ships I've seen in my entire life.
Hollingsworth and I were on the observation deck watching the Unified Authority ships arrive.
Looks like a packing crate for mailing battleships. You'd have more control steering a piece of shit down a toilet.
Yeah. More barges followed in a series of flashes. They floated out of the broadcast zone like boxes on an assembly line.
It's getting pretty close to 0 hour. Why are you going down to the planet now?
Reconnaissance.
Are you coming back to the Adeen to watch the attack?
I'm staying on the planet.
I'm just curious. Does your martyr complex ever get in your way?
What did you say?
You assigned yourself to point position when we fought the aliens on Terra now.
I led a team.
You were the commanding officer, not some specking platoon leader. You were supposed to observe and direct.
I thought I could do a better job if I was on the field with my men.
You got stuck in a basement. You got trapped in a specking basement with half the specking Avatari army swarming around you.
Well, you don't think I did that on purpose?
No, but it shouldn't have happened.
We won the battle.
Tomer told me you led the team that went into the Avatari mines on New Copenhagen.
He went in right beside me. Maybe he was a martyr too.
He's a dead martyr. You're a living martyr. People respect dead martyrs. The living ones are just a pain in the ass. I heard you led the attack on the Mogat homeworld.
I saw no point in responding. Outside the ship, a line of 10 enormous barges paraded past us. The barges were beige and marked with flashing lights to help transport pilots find landing pads.
I won't go down after you. If you get in trouble, you'll be on your own.
I wouldn't ask you to.
I won't send men down after you either.
What's your point?
I just... Damn it, Harris. You're so specking self-righteous. No, it's not even that. You're not self-righteous. You're the goddamn real thing. You're righteous. I don't know how that happened. How you became right, and I became wrong.
I'm not so righteous.
Sooner or later, you'll be a martyr. You're just counting the days. Just passing time until you meet your speckin' maker.
I'm a clone. I've already met my makers, and I don't like them.
So why go down to Olympus Kree? You say there's gonna be an apocalypse. Fine, I believe you. What do you think you'll accomplish by riding it out down there? You think they're gonna make you a saint or something? Saint Harris, guardian saint of clones and marines?
I don't think I'm a saint, but I sure as hell am not cut out to be a general. I don't like giving orders, and I don't like watching battles from a safe distance.
Look, Harris, I admire you. You're the best goddamn marine I've ever...
You didn't like me much on Terrano.
That's because I thought you were wrong about everything. Turns out you were right about everything.
I thought it was about Ava. I thought you were mad about my hiding a girl in my quarters while everyone else was confined to the ship.
Yeah, well, that was more envy than anger. I would have done the same thing if I'd had a shot at Ava Gardner. Any man would. You don't really want to kill yourself, do you?
Kill myself? I tried that once. It didn't work. Liberators can't kill themselves. It goes against our programming. It's not a question of suicide. It's a question of needing to be in the middle of the action. It's in my DNA. I can't kill myself and I can't sit out the fight.
So you're screwed.
Hollingsworth stayed on the observation deck as I went to my quarters and swapped my service uniform for combat armor. Nickel Hill had offered to loan me shielded armor, but I turned him down. What a laugh. My mood turned dark as I fastened my armor. Hill said that the Avatari we faced on New Copenhagen were just the janitors, and that this time we would face the A-Team. I wondered what weapon the Avatari would use when they attacked, and realized that while I was down there, my fate was entirely in the Unified's hands. Handing over the controls always made me nervous. No Marine expects to live forever, but we all hope to see the day through.
Wheel, are you there?
I was testing the special interlink connection Hill had given me so that I could contact the virtual version of the Arthur C. Clarke Wheel. Arthur Breeze answered.
Are you heading down to the planet?
That I am.
Sweetwater is asleep.
Breeze was a physicist who had published volumes on nanoparticles. He was probably a better scientist than Sweetwater, but his lack of confidence was an Achilles heel. He stuttered during briefings and used so much jargon that he could never communicate his ideas clearly. Sweetwater, whose expertise extended into chemistry as well as physics, had no shortage of confidence.
You're sure 50 feet down will be enough?
Based on my best calculations, 10 feet might be enough. The combustion on New Copenhagen was strictly a surface event. Sweetwater sent a drone down to take soil samples. The heat penetration was only a few feet.
So if someone was in a basement apartment on New Copenhagen, they might have survived.
It's not likely. Concrete calcifies at 2,000 degrees. At 3,000, soil melts.
Not all of the buildings melted on New Copenhagen.
The surface of the planet retained heat longer than the atmosphere. The soil and air samples showed that the atmosphere reached temperatures of 9,000 degrees before the heat subsided. If you were in a building with any kind of ventilation system, you'd be incinerated.
Good to know.
Harris, you might want to consider flying down to the planet's surface after the event. Any structure exposed to those kind of temperatures is going to sustain fundamental damage. You could survive the event and still find yourself buried alive.
As my shuttle exited the Ad-Din, Lieutenant Nobles offered to stay on Olympus Cree for the mission. Ahead of us, swarms of transports clambered in and out of the Olympus Cree atmosphere. The planet looked normal and healthy, just another green and blue marble no different than Terrano or St. Augustine, or Earth for that matter. Only this one had a death sentence hanging over it.
Are you out of your specking mind?
I don't understand, sir. I heard you were going to stay down there.
Interesting point. Here in the cockpit, this shuttle was no more comfortable than a transport. The ceiling was lower. I sat in the co-pilot's chair and considered the instrumentation, which was more like the controls in my old Johnston Starliner than the controls in a transport. I might be able to teach myself how to fly this bird in a pinch, I told myself.
Do you know about any underground runway systems?
Not offhand.
Then we wouldn't have any place safe to store the shuttle.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
See if you can get your hands on a transport for the return trip. If things go wrong, I may need to get off this rock in a hurry.
As we reached the atmosphere, a convoy of transports rose past us. They looked awkward and overburdened by their own weight. There had to be a better way of emptying the planet than evacuating its population 100 people at a time. But when I tried to think of an alternative, I came up empty. Crossing Odessa, I saw hundreds of transports flying in wing formations like flocks of geese. Below us, the streets were choked with cars.
I got your friend's signal. He's by an airstrip on the edge of town.
A call came in from Sweetwater.
We just got back results from our atmospheric test. The tachyon D concentration is rising quickly.
Are they forming an ion curtain?
Breeze doesn't think so. He says these new tachyons act differently than the tachyons in the curtain. Their energy levels are off the charts.
How much time do I have?
Before the event?
Yeah, how much time before the event?
We have no frame of reference, General. Your guess is as good as ours.
We were coming in for a landing, flying just a couple of hundred feet off the ground, slowing, dropping altitude. Freeman's signal had led us to a private airstrip. Whoever owned the property had apparently abandoned it. No planes sat on the runway.
We can tell you the tachyon D concentration at Olympus Cree has increased significantly over the last hour, perhaps by a factor of 4.
Does that mean something is about to happen?
It may mean several things, General, but we do not have sufficient information to make any predictions.
Nobles taxied. There was a 3-story control tower at the far end of the runway. Freeman stood beside the tower, dressed in custom-fitted Marine combat armor. He might well have been listening in on this conversation. Sweetwater had contacted me on an open frequency. If Freeman wasn't listening, it meant he and Sweetwater had already had this conversation.
If we've drawn correct conclusions from New Copenhagen, the tachyon particles the Avatari are using for this attack won't be recycled like the ones they used in their first wave of attacks.
What does that mean?
Nobles slowed the shuttle as we approached the tower.
In their first invasion, the Avatari kept recycling the same base of particles. They bonded them together to form soldiers and guns. When we destroyed the soldiers, the tachyons returned to the atmosphere where they recharged. We believe these new particles vanish once their energy is expended.
I don't like the sound of that.
Noble stopped the shuttle and the fuselage lowered, but I remained in my seat.
That is the bad news. The good news is that the Avatari appear to want the planet in one piece.
Do they have other options?
General, with the kind of energy those tachyons produce, the aliens could demolish Olympus Kree. They could reduce it to a floating cinder and make it explode into atom-sized fragments. Our analysis of the attack on New Copenhagen leads us to believe that the aliens plan to annihilate any opposition on the planet without destroying the planet itself.
That's the good news?
We do feel a little better knowing that they do not want to destroy the planet. Yes.
Bree says we'll be safe if we're 50 feet underground. What am I missing here?
We've looked at Arthur's calculations.
You don't agree with them?
Arthur's calculations always add up perfectly. In fact, we think you would be safe 15 feet underground. It's the intangibles that have us worried.
The intangibles?
With the kind of power the Avatari have in those Tachyon D particles, they could destroy the entire planet. That is clearly not what they plan to do, but our question is, how much damage will they be willing to inflict on the planet if they know you are on it?
Why is your fleet landing men?
Freeman and I watched the shuttle streak away across the runway.
Are you sure they're ours? Maybe the Unifieds are landing troops.
No, these men are clones, and they're riding in on EMN transports.
Shit.
They were leaving the Double Ys behind.
They're killing the Double Y clones. Are they in Odessa?
Jerome. That's on the other side of the planet.
So, it's out of our hands.
Freeman said nothing. Our conversation had hit a stalemate that Sweetwater broke when he contacted us over the interlink.
Gentlemen, you should be aware that the temperature on Olympus Kree has risen by 6 degrees over the last 15 minutes.
That doesn't sound so out of the ordinary.
Was that change global?
Global.
So at this rate, we'll hit 9,000 degrees in another 6 months?
The surface temperature is unstable. But for what it's worth, we don't believe this change is a preamble to the event. Still, you might want to get to safety as quickly as possible.
Have you notified the fleet?
Freeman meant the Unified Authority fleet. The enlisted man's fleet had supposedly come to oversee the evacuation. The Unified Authority had come to conduct it.
Yes, sir. They are on the last stages of the evacuation as we speak.
Freeman had an all-terrain armored truck waiting just off the airstrip. Without saying a word, he headed toward that truck, knowing that I would follow. I walked to the truck and climbed in on the passenger side. We cut across the empty suburb. Then Freeman veered toward the mountains, and I saw our destination. We would ride out the event in a power station that had been built into the side of a cliff. Only the facade of the administrative offices was visible from the street. It was a three-story pillbox made of concrete and steel, with no effort given to ornamentation. The land in front of the building was park-like, with sprawling hills, a manicured lawn, and a footbridge spanning a man-made river. Freeman drove us across this jade and sapphire setting and into a concrete alley that opened to a parking lot in which a fleet of heavy equipment sat unguarded, ladder trucks and cranes and bulldozers. Across the lot, the open maw of a subterranean bunker gaped from the side of a mountain.
Picturesque.
A thick metal curtain closed behind us. Lights bloomed along the ramp, leading down deep below.
Think we'll be able to exit the same way that we came?
There's a back door if we need it.
We drove down the spiraling ramp, passing floors with 20-foot ceilings. The walls of the ramp were foot-thick cement. We had entered a shadowy underworld of concrete and steel, driving three floors down beneath the foot of a mountain.
Doesn't get much safer than this.
I kept my armor on, but took my helmet off. Freeman pulled the truck to a stop. He placed his little two-way on the dash of the truck and tapped the button. A moment later, Sweetwater and Breeze appeared.
I know they're almost done, but they're still cutting it too close. The temperature on the planet is fluctuating wildly.
We're seeing 10-degree temperature swings.
Have you told General Hill?
He says they're going as fast as they can.
Oh my. They just had a 12-degree fluctuation. It could happen any moment.
As it turned out, Breeze was wrong. the event did not occur for a long time. 1 hour passed, then another. Sweetwater and Breeze gave us hourly reports, informing us that surface temperatures had stabilized more or less.
The Tachyon D count has doubled over the last hour.
Between calls, I had nothing to do but sit and wait. I explored the power station, examining enormous turbines that reached to the ceiling.
What if the building collapses? How are we going to dig our way out?
Freeman pointed toward a distant wall where an emergency exit sign glowed.
Stairs? That's your answer if the building comes down around us? We can just take the stairs.
The rest of the station will collapse before that stairwell.
Another hour passed. I thought about the double Y clones. Did they know they were in danger?
The last of the transports has dug for the barges.
As Freeman chatted with Sweetwater and Breeze, I found a comfortable curve on the back of the truck and fell asleep against it. Apparently, I slept right through the event.
It's over.
As cataclysms go, it was not much. The ground did not shake, and the walls did not crumble. Putting on his helmet to seal his armor, Freeman started walking up the ramp. I donned my helmet and followed, scanning for radiation as I went. I used the night-for-day lens in my visor so I could see clearly in the dark. The top level of the station seemed unaffected by whatever had happened. The structure looked sound. No breaks in the walls, no toppled equipment. As we rounded a turn and started toward the exit, I noticed something on the ground. In the blue-gray graphics of my night-for-day lens, the stuff looked like ice. It had an organic look, like a thick liquid that had spilled on the ground and frozen in place. I switched the lens in my visor to heat vision. Through this lens, frozen objects appeared blue, and humans gave off an orange signature. The stuff on the concrete near my feet was white. Had I stepped on it, my armored boot would have melted. I started to ask Freeman what it was, but when I looked up the ramp, I had my answer. I saw the night sky. The heavy metal shutter that had lowered to block the entrance had melted soft, then imploded.
You might as well blow the rest of it right off its tracks.
Once it cools down.
What the speck happened here?
Freeman did not answer.
Have you checked with Sweetwater and Breeze?
Communications are out.
If a nuke went off outside this station, the shockwave would have sent the door flying, but it wouldn't have specking melted it. A moment passed before I realized that I wasn't looking at clouds. I was looking at a sky filled with steam. The rebreather in my armor would protect me if I stepped out, but without it, that air would have poached my lungs. Whatever had struck Olympus Cree, it wasn't just powerful, it was cataclysmic. For now, Freeman and I were trapped in the underground station, not buried alive, but trapped. We could not leave the ramp. There was too much molten metal on the ground, and the concrete around the entrance was burning hot, heated to crystal. Not daring to step any closer, I stared out through the ruined entrance and into the sky. I saw clouds of steam that smoldered against a dirty black sky. With its roiling orange clouds and its layers of steam and smoke, the horizon looked like it was made of embers.
What do we do now?
We wait.
How long?
Till the planet cools off.
So we walked down the ramp, and I found my place on the truck and tried to sleep. Freeman woke me up a while later.
We can get out.
Freeman and I climbed into the truck. Sweetwater greeted me on the interlink.
Glad to see you made it.
What happened out there? We were just telling Raymond.
I've never seen anything like this. We had satellites all around the planet looking for an explosion. From all we observed, it was a spontaneous event. The temperature over Odessa rose from 72 degrees to 9,000 degrees so quickly that our instruments recorded it as instantaneous. The same thing happened all around the planet. A spontaneous and uniform change in temperature to 9,000 degrees.
Which also explains why the Tachyon D levels dropped. The little devils consumed themselves. They burned themselves up like a gas in a fire. Do you have any idea how much energy it would take to generate that much heat? Here are some of the satellite images. You can see for yourself.
I saw an image of a city at night in my visor. Streetlights shone, but no cars roved the streets. Without lights shining in their windows, the buildings of Odessa hid in the darkness. Then it happened. The event did not start on one side of the screen and move to the other like an explosion. It happened everywhere all at once. The very air seemed to catch on fire.
9,000 degrees. It's nearly as hot as the surface of the sun.
A counter appeared in the top right corner of the screen. It ticked off seconds and hundredths of seconds.
Now, this is curious.
The camera panned back, showing more of the street. The windows of several buildings along an avenue exploded.
You see how the windows are bursting outward? We think it is because the atmosphere is rising. That means the pressure from the air trapped inside the buildings is not being matched by air pressure on the outside of the building. It's all guesswork, of course. No one has ever seen anything like this before. But we think heat is causing the atmosphere to rise like a hot air balloon. So the pressure on the outside of the buildings is dropping. Here, look at this.
The camera moved in on a skyscraper. The building coughed glass out of its windows floor by floor, the damage rising quickly. Not all of the windows shattered. Some had already melted. The image changed to show a forest, and the timer in the corner returned to zero. At 5 seconds, the trees in the forest lit up like matchheads in a book that had been set ablaze. The trees did not ignite, one here and one there. They all lit up at once, flaring into a brilliant orange. The image changed again, this time showing a vast body of water, maybe an ocean or maybe a great lake. Then the heat started. 20 seconds in, steam began to rise off the water.
We estimate the heat penetrated no more than 5 feet deep. Any fish swimming close to shore would have been poached.
To this point, the video feed did not show anything that might have caused the explosion I had heard when I awoke. Nor had it shown anything that would have caused the shutter at the top of the power station to burst inward. On the screen, the timer showed 83 seconds and froze.
It lasted precisely 83 seconds. At 83 seconds, the heat stopped and the air temperature dropped sharply.
The timer started counting. It reached 96 seconds.
What was that?
The heat from the event lifted the atmosphere. We estimate that the atmosphere rose approximately 550 feet from the ground level because of the heat. After the event ended, the atmosphere dropped back into place.
The video feed stopped.
I've reviewed the data again, and I still cannot find evidence of an initial explosion, not even a transfer of energy that might have set this off.
The only anomaly is the tachyons.
Does the atmosphere look stable?
Completely stable.
Raymond? You want to be careful out there. We're tracking movement on the planet.
You mean survivors?
Whatever it is, it's so fast it barely registers on our instruments.
It's behaving like an electrical current in circuit.
We think it's traveling in a set path, but we only pick it up in certain locations. We can't tell if there's a single current streaming around the planet or several separate currents traveling in vectors. But our instruments keep registering it in the same key location.
What about the tachyon levels?
Oh, now, that is interesting. 99% of the tachyon D concentration was spent during the conflagration. The rest is diminishing quickly.
Will the current disappear when the tachyons run out?
Excellent question, Raymond. That is our guess. Only time will tell if our hypothesis is correct. Of course, we still found a residue of tachyon D on New Copenhagen, so the assumptions may not be valid.
How long before it's safe out there?
At this rate, 15 minutes. Perhaps you should stay where you are and wait until the currents run down.
The truck was already moving.
Do you have a fix on our location?
We do.
It's time to run the tests.
Freeman drove up to the twisted wreck of the shutter and stopped. The parking lot had not changed much. But the fleet of heavy equipment was no longer parked in neat rows. A steamroller had simply sunk into the street. Cranes lay on their sides, and a few of the trucks now lay upside down.
What the hell?
Stolid as ever, Freeman said nothing.
Gentlemen, you will want to keep your helmets on.
If you mean it's hot out there, I can see that.
I looked to my right and saw the remains of a dumpster. The thin sheet metal of its walls had simply wilted in the heat.
The temperature outside the tunnel is 126 degrees. That qualifies as toasty. But the reason you'll want your helmets is to breathe. You're in the middle of a fire zone. The oxygen is thin.
How thin? Does oxygen burn at 9,000 degrees?
Oxygen doesn't burn.
As Sweetwater spoke, Freeman got out and moved to the top of the ramp, where he attached some kind of panel to the wall. A large white light at the top of the panel winked sporadically, and smaller diodes flashed red, blue, yellow, green, in no discernible order along the bottom.
What is that?
Raymond, it is essential we get the meter up right away.
It's up.
What is that?
Harris, this little invention just may save your life. It detects tachyon activity. If the tachyons flood into your hidey hole, we should be able to detect them.
I thought tachyons were too small and too fast to track.
The meter tracks energy fluctuations along a defined plane.
Does that answer your question?
I decided to move on rather than risk more scientific gibberish. As I watched the lights on the panel, Freeman walked around the truck and pulled out a black case that looked about the right size to carry a spare set of armor. It did not carry armor, however. When he opened it, I recognized the contents. I had seen him use one of these before. The head of the robot was a radio-controlled drone with a propeller and wings. The body was a 12-foot-long train made of a heat-resistant silver material. It reflected the ember and smoke sky like a mirror. He removed the flying snake from its case, stretched it out, then used his remote to launch it in the air behind the truck. The snake took off from the ground and swirled through the air like a Chinese dragon. The robot flew out of the underground power station and into the parking lot. It managed an aerobatic loop, then burst into flames. The spontaneous combustion lasted only a second and left nothing in its wake, not even smoke.
Did you get that?
Localized ignition. Of course, it happened so quickly I can only speculate.
Raymond, can you launch the second drone?
Freeman set off to prepare a second drone without responding. I eavesdropped as Sweetwater and Breeze spoke privately. They traded scientific jargon, but they could have been speaking some long-extinct language for all I understood of it. Meanwhile, Freeman returned with another black case. A few moments later, a second silver dragon soared up the ramp, its reflective train wagging behind it. It flew over the top of the truck and into the parking lot, where it burst into flames.
It appears the tachyons are drawn to movement.
Should I run the shield test?
Yes, we better move along. The tachyon level is dropping faster than we expected.
Freeman's next toy was a little robot car, which he placed on the ground beside the truck. He fiddled with a remote, and a bright yellow glow formed around the car. I knew that glow. I'd seen it around Unified Authority ships. It hung like an aura over the new UA combat armor. It stopped bullets and particle beams.
Are you ready?
Go ahead, Raymond.
Those shields might have been able to stop bullets or absorb lasers, but they didn't do shit against tachyons. As the car wound its way into the yard, it burst into flames.
Did they do the same thing to our ships?
We don't see any reason why they would bother attacking a ship.
Yes.
Should I try the weapons?
By all means.
Freeman pulled a sniper rifle from the back of the truck. He pointed the gun out of the opening. A split second later, a tiny flicker of flame ignited just outside the entrance to the tunnel. The bullet had combusted, just like the toy car, just like the drone dragon.
6 feet.
6 feet?
The bullet traveled 6 feet out of the station before it caught fire.
Oh, it might have caught fire the moment it entered open air, but it traveled 6 feet before it disintegrated.
Freeman removed a particle beam cannon and started toward the top of the ramp.
Well, are you sure you want to do that?
He did not answer. As he moved up the ramp, I watched the light on the sensor. It stayed mostly white, with an occasional flick of yellow. As Freeman got closer, the light turned yellow. The tachyon activity had shot up. They might even have homed in on him.
Ray, stop!
He saw it too and froze, but the light remained yellow.
What do I do?
Raymond, stay perfectly still.
Should I run the test?
Stay still. According to our latest readings, the tachyon concentration will drop to a safe level in 2 minutes.
Freeman chose that moment to do something that was absolutely insane. Instead of concentrating on standing as still as possible, he aimed the cannon. The glittering green beam of the particle beam traveled in a perfectly straight line the rest of the way out of the power station and out into the yard. My eyes switched from the particle beam to the meter warning panel and back. I leaped into the driver's seat of the truck. Unlike the bullet, the shielded robotic car, and the drones, the beam seemed not to interest the tachyons. The meter flashed orange for a millisecond, and I stomped down on the gas, stayed behind the wheel just long enough to guide the truck around Freeman, then jumped from the cab. Armored or not, the truck burst into flames the moment it entered into the yard. Freeman said nothing. His silence was icy.
Sweetwater, how much longer?
Nothing.
Breeze?
Nothing.
They're gone. We were linked to them through a two-way communicator.
The one in the truck?
Freeman did not answer.
Does that mean they're dead?
Not any deader than they were before.
Without Sweetwater and Breeze guiding our next steps, Freeman and I ended up sitting on the ramp for 20 minutes before deciding to take our chances on the street. I still had a go-pack filled with weapons, so I piped a grenade into the parking lot. It lasted long enough to explode. I hurled the empty launcher after it. The 6-inch chrome cylinder rolled in a circle and came to a stop.
Looks safe.
Freeman started hiking toward the entrance without responding. As we stepped out, I took a temperature reading using the atmospheric thermometer built into my visor. The air temperature had dropped to a mere 93 degrees. Wispy spirals of steam rose from the ground below our feet, but our boots did not sink into the ash-covered concrete. Ripples of heat rose from a crane lying on its side a few feet ahead of us. My brain numbed by the devastation on every side of me, I followed Freeman around the administration building and out to the street. I used my command link to get in contact with Nobles.
Nobles, come and get us.
A few minutes later, the sleek bird appeared in the sky, winding its way down to us so quickly it looked like it might crash. Nobles touched down on an empty stretch of highway, his wheels sinking 2 inches into the crumbling ground. We flew to the Ad-Din through almost vacant space. The barges had long since left. So had most of our ships. With Olympus Cree evacuated and burned, there was no reason to maintain a fleet in the area. As we approached the Ad-Din, I received a message from Captain Villanueva directing me to the Kamehameha.
Do you have any interest in attending an enlisted man's summit?
No. I have a plane waiting on the cruiser.
What are you going to do next?
Same as you. I'm getting ready for Terrano.
It sounds like you're out to save humanity.
He did not answer. 15 minutes later, I was met outside of the meeting room of the Kamehameha by Warshaw and his entourage. He briefed me on what I had missed.
Life as we know it just ended. The Unifieds are talking about resurrecting the old Cousteau under Sea City's program. They think we might be able to survive this storm if we go underwater.
I vaguely remembered learning about the Cousteau program. When the United States and its allies began colonizing space, the old French government turned its eyes toward deep sea exploration. The program lasted a couple of years before the French gave up and signed on with the Americans.
Rebuilding those cities could take years, maybe decades.
You got any better ideas?
I did not have any better ideas.
Looks like we're rejoining the Unified Authority. Earth is the only planet that never got invaded. The aliens will go there last. Hopefully, we can get everyone underwater by then. Welcome to the future, Harris. It's just like the goddamn past.
I stood there, silent and frustrated.
This is a negotiation, not a war council. I can't bring you in. I just wanted to thank you for what you did in Olympus Cree. You gave us a fighting chance. But it's over now.
I need to get to Terrano.
You gonna warn them?
They're next.
I hear you had a girl on that rock. Hollingsworth says you took up with Ava Gardner.
Yeah, something like that.
How are you gonna get there? I can't give you the add-in if you're traveling into neutral space. The Unifieds might see it as an act of bad faith.
I'll find a way.
You're on your own with Terrano. It's not a part of our empire.
Then he signaled for an aide to join our conversation.
McGraw, the general needs a broadcast key.
The aide was an old man.
Aye, sir.
A broadcast key?
You're gonna need a key if you're gonna get that shuttle you're flying to Terrano. You be careful with that key, Harris. I only issue them to fleet commanders. And now to you. God knows you've earned it.
Thank you, sir.
Good luck.